Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. We have some marketing for you today. I kind of want to do some recaps on the content that we've been covering, trying to help kind of lay out, you know, how America and how society kind of migrated into this direction of American enlightenment. That's the whole point of the scale of liberty, understanding the struggle, because the struggle for liberty has been the constant civil war. We have been at war with these two ideologies all the way back to the beginning of mankind. It has been the devil, Satan, that evil force, the dark side of humanity that wants to enslave others. It started with just you doing my labor for me so that I don't have to live by the sweat of my brow. And I'm actually going to get into this because I do not like, I use scriptures or I reference, I should say, Christianity, Christian scriptures, so forth. But I want to be clear because I don't want to be perceived as a hypocrite. There are lots of people out there that want a third awakening. They want a revival. And even though I'm firmly a Christian, and I'm not going to get into my convictions over the air, but I do not believe that what we need to do with the government is dictate a revival, to dictate a awakening. That has to happen on everybody else's terms. As I tell pastors, as I tell religious leaders, as I talk to people that have that, you know, that religious conviction, we need an awakening. This country needs to repent and blah, blah, blah. That's fine. But Republic Review is not a process of repentance. It is not a process of the awakening. It is a process of getting the government into compliance. It does not establish a theocracy, and I'll never support a theocracy, at least not one ran by mankind. I mean, it's different if Christ himself comes down and sets up a theocracy, because every knee will bow, every head will bow and every knee will bend and so forth and so on. And so I get that. But when it comes to being left to mankind, being left to being led by men and being governed by mankind, we need to ensure that there is no laws respecting freedom and governance of religion other than any religion that does not fully embrace and respect individual liberty and individual sovereignty. There is, I know of one religion that has zero respect for the individual liberty and an individual's sovereignty. That religion is all about compulsion. That religion is you will do, and if not, you are punished. And so that is not a religion that is compliant or compatible, that may be a better word, compatible with a constitutional republic that we have here. In other words, anybody that's a member of that religion or faith, and they put their arm up to the square and they take an oath, they have outright lied, because they do not put individual liberty and individual sovereignty based on their religion as something that they will support and defend. As a matter of fact, as soon as their arm goes down, they go into the woodwork and they start trying to create laws to subjugate us and actually put us under their rule. We should not be allowing, and Thomas Jefferson and the framers understood this. This is why most religions were not permitted in America other than Christianity. When Madison talked about, and when the framers and those people back, even in the 17th century, We're talking about religious freedom and tolerance. It was towards Christianity. It was not towards, every religion under the sun. As a matter of fact, I will tell you, if anybody tries to assert that Satan and devil worshiping, witchcraft, and those types of things would have been able to get, a toehold in any of the states, not just the New England states, in any of the states, they would have been ran out. Every state had bans on Mohammedan and as well as Buddhists and so forth, or Islam. I'm here to tell you that their version of secularism was not godlessness. The framers' version of secularism was non-denominational Christianity. That's simple, really. It is that simple. So I will get into this in more detail, but we want to kind of do a recap and kind of help point us in what is the logical step that we want to get into next, because we covered the ratification debates, and so that kind of laid out the enumerated constitution. So we backed up and kind of started all over again, and we will cover that backing up and starting all over again when I get to it. I just wanted to kind of let you know that we're going to be doing that, and we're going to get into some marketing today. We will also be, you can look forward to having Alex Newman on. We'll probably be interviewing him possibly tomorrow if all works out. And so we will be airing that interview on Wednesday. And we're looking to get a few more politicians. What did you think? What did you think of Brian Miller? What did you think of Tony Randolph? These men understand what is important and what is on the line. We need more leaders. You need to help promote and get people such as yourself to run. It's not about whether you're, going to be able to, bring, if you want to run a campaign on bringing benefits to your constituents, buying them off or, paying for favors. In other words, giving legislation that favors businesses in your district or what have you, then, you're going down your own agenda. But if your intent is to support and defend individual liberty and individual sovereignty, then I will tell you that you have the best chance because you represent everybody. If you are trying to get and ensure everybody has equal footing, that nobody gets an advantage because of government, because that's how companies actually get advantages. They either get contracts from the government or they get government to create regulations and or laws to constrain them and so forth. So just to be clear, We want you to understand this very clearly, that if you want to run and you want us, Reclaiming the Republic, G.R. Mobley, endorsing you, then you have to be standing firmly on the Constitution. No agendas whatsoever. It's about leading and it's about demanding compliance. So what you should be doing, if you're not running, you should be actually emailing every single one of your state legislators. You should email every single sheriff and ask them, beg them, and tell them, just like Randolph and Miller are doing now in South Dakota and Wyoming, they're out emailing and asking everybody to, please state your position regarding this travesty of what's happening to our Constitution and people's liberties. I want you to understand, we need people to take this position so that they can defend it, because this is the whole point of elections. Who is it that you're representing? Are you representing the lobbyist, or are you representing the Constitution? Your first and foremost constituent is the Constitution. It's not the people that elected you. And as a matter of fact, everybody that elects you, if you are supporting and defending the Constitution, you are supporting and defending them and their liberties. To be very, very clear, we've had our liberty stolen, and that's one of the reasons why we got into property. And I emphasize that you have property in your rights and rights, or you have rights in your property and property in your rights. And so when your rights are being taken, they're being stolen from you. So this show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. And you are listening to the only show with academic evidence as well as academic evidence-based solutions. We don't want you to be a part of the problem. And we believe knowledge is power. If we help you understand what is important and what you need to know regarding the Constitution, then you can go out, not just citing scripture and verse, but citing the framers, exactly what they said and so forth. This is why I try to tell people, people that read the scriptures on a regular basis, but they're clueless about the Constitution. I even know people that really know, they think they know a lot about the Constitution because they've read the Federalist Papers and so forth, but you don't understand the Constitution until you've read the ratification debates, because that's where it was actually debated. It's more insightful than even the Constitutional Convention, because the Constitutional Convention, they were working, trying to frame things. They weren't there really trying to pick it apart like the Anti-Federalists were. The Anti-Federalists were doing anything and everything they could to ensure that that document didn't get ratified. And you can read that from Henry and Mason and the rest of these guys. The fact of the matter is, their arguments couldn't hold water. Or bottom line, the delegates ended up rejecting their arguments and supporting the Federalist arguments in ratifying the Constitution. So we're at a hard break, so we'll be right back after these two promos. So stay tuned, and we'll be heading into some need-to-know news in a few. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and Republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with Republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as Republic review. Please read my argument for Republic review as well as my description of the Republic review model on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in, and let's get on with the dialogue.
Okay, so we're also going to be working with scheduling John Durash. I've already kind of talked to the leadership at the NLA, and what I want to do is I really just wanted to sit down and talk about the nuts and bolts, the basis, the academic basis of the grand jury, if they've got, that, as well as what does it take, how do they do this, and so forth. What I'm trying to do, folks, is I'm trying to distill this whole process of how you can get engaged as citizens and start helping to educate your sheriff, because your sheriff does possess the power and the authority to call for a citizen's grand jury. If government is corrupt and they're the last ones standing, and they're standing to support the Constitution, they need to call forth a citizen's grand jury, which is what we want to do. Is we want to start seeing sheriffs calling citizens' grand juries and laying out whether or not the Constitution has been violated by any and all politicians who have called and recommended and ordered, decreed stay-home orders. Anybody who has suspended your rights and privileges and immunities of being able to peacefully assemble, to go to meetings or what have you, to be able to go to church and or to actually, you know, express your religious convictions, just to be out in public, to commit commerce, the ability to actually go out and participate in commerce is a constitutional right. You have a right to make a living. The government does not have a right to suspend your ability to make that living. That's why we read Madison's Property, because clearly he talks about all of these things. And when government starts taking away your abilities to do that, you have a despotic, tyrannical government, and it needs to be put in place. Now, in those days, prior to Madison's essay on property, and I believe that he wasn't necessarily talking about the federal government, because he understands that the federal government, we do not need a revolution. The Lord gave us everything we needed so that we wouldn't have to fight a revolution, because I truly believe that the Lord knew that a revolution would be futile in this time and age with the technology and everything else. There's just no way us citizens can actually obtain the level of technology and weaponry and sophistication that governments can. They've militarized themselves to the gills with all sorts of technology that makes them so lethal. I mean, the government has never been this lethal. You look at Nazi Germany and so forth. That was not nearly as lethal as government today, because they have the ability to kill you in so many different ways, and they have mechanisms of delivery, whether it be vaccinations, overhead spraying, or we call them chemtrails. There are all sorts of things that they're doing to be able to manipulate and to be able to move their agenda in managing, controlling, or putting you exactly where they want you us to be. So anyway, I'll do the recap in a minute, but I do want to let you know we're asking you to help us with a listener drive to help grow this show and get more people to start coming and drinking at the well, understanding that there actually is a solution. We've got a constitution that's a contract. It's a compact. It's that simple. It's not this, you know, labyrinth of laws and rulings that lawyers want you to believe in. It is a compact, and either the roles, responsibilities, and powers are enumerated in that compact or they're not. And if they're not, they have no business doing anything with them, period. They have no authority to create corporations. They have no authority to just create any kind of role, responsibility, or power. They have no authority over social issues, whether that be marriage, whether that be life, like abortion and so forth, or sterilizing. They have no ability to meddle in those things because those are not enumerated powers. Because we had an enumerated constitution with, on top of that, a restrictive set of amendments. These things, we want to make sure you will not do these things. Not even that with a sleight of hand, you cannot do these things. That's the Bill of Rights. And these are the only things that we're delegating to you to do. Now, see, this is why I prefer the concept of not having the Bill of Rights. But states were able and capable and were so diabolical Forgive me. States were so evil, nefarious, they were so bad that they were actually suspending the rights of freemen after the Civil War. This is why that 14th Amendment was critical. It was critical. Anybody that is standing up saying, I don't believe in the incorporation clause of the 14th Amendment, I don't believe in these things, either they're deniers or maybe, you know, there is the remote possibility that these people could have a racial bias, that they didn't want to see those types of things. And, you know, they have the luxury of time to kind of create this buffer. Oh, well, I wasn't supporting the, you know, the restrictions and all these draconian laws against the freemen, but I'm telling you that the 14th Amendment makes it impossible for states to take away our civil rights as well. Without the 14th Amendment, states can take away your right to bear arms. You don't have a Second Amendment right from the state. The states can do that. Anybody that is supporting the are trying to assert that the 14th Amendment does not apply to the states, that what they're telling you is that the states can pass laws to, you know, deny you your religious expression. They can pass laws to deny your right to bear arms. They can pass laws to deny your rights of speech. If you understand the evil side of government and being able to take away your liberty, the 14th Amendment became the true blessing in the Civil War, because that's when John Bingham applied those individual privileges and immunities, not the organizational privileges like the freedom of the press and the Establishment Clause. States can, whether we like it or not, they can actually establish a church to take care of compassionate services. Not necessarily to inflict, because bottom line, they cannot tell you your right of conscience. They cannot tell you how to express yourself religiously. But they can get a religion to actually provide the compassionate services and so forth. But they cannot tell you that you have to be in that religion, because then they're violating the First Amendment in your individual privileges and immunities. But they can, like I said, that's why states did. They used churches that were working in the communities, providing education, healthcare, and those types of things. Now, I am a big advocate, and I just want to, I'm going to open the door for you so you can understand what had ended up happening. You know, the godless people, the people that want and support that dark side of the scale of liberty. They want slavery. They want communism. They're godless. They do not care, and the ends justify their means. I want you to understand that these folks used and tried to use the Constitution in perverting it by saying, oh, well, you know, you can't, we have to have the separation of church and state, and we have to have the state do all of these things for us. Actually not. The problem is that they, because they had no church, they infiltrated and they convinced government to actually move in a position to creating godlessness and mandating that you don't bring your religion into church or into the government halls or into the city or into the public fray. Those are all violations of the Constitution. It is okay for your state to actually, and I believe that one of the ways we can reel in, and I hope I'm piquing your interest, one of the ways that we can restore education and everything else is by restoring it back to the churches. Allowing, and instead of having an established church, I think that the state, the smart thing would be to basically, you know, regulate, not necessarily regulate, but allow based on, let's say your town is, you live in a town that's primarily Catholic, and the Catholics have the ability to take over the education system, healthcare, and those types of things, and let them do that. Now, if all of a sudden the Protestant faiths, you know, pull together, they want to have a Protestant education system, then the state's not trying to monopolize with Catholicism in your town. But they want competition because any state and anybody that understands competition is actually good. Can the Protestants educate better than the Catholics? There you go. And then if more people desire that Protestant education and you actually start, so they should allow charter schools to be out there to compete with whatever those faiths are. Now, let's say you have a large community that has all these different faiths and you've got pockets of, let's say, Jews here, Protestants here, Catholics and so forth. Then you can actually have within a town or within a large municipal area, different churches running different education systems, and they could actually be working together even. That's even a possible thing. Same thing with running hospitals and so forth. The whole point is getting government out of the compassionate services is critical. That's one of the reasons why we're going to be going down the path or leading you down this path of the cod fishery bounties. But we've got a hard break. We'll be right back after this. Thank you so much.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Okay, so there's a reason why we're going through this content the way we are. The scale of liberty kind of lays out the narrative of, you know, how people are wired and how this has been going on for a long time. Things don't change. There's been a lot of really smart people that have created all these twists on ideologies and philosophies and so forth. And they've had these, their theories kind of, you know, named after them. GR is not looking to try to, you know, create his own theory. There are literally only two ends of this. And then you have all of these different steps in between. If you want to figure out which philosophy and which, ideology aligns with a different phase within that migration from liberty to enslavement or back, by all means, go ahead. The fact of the matter is there you are either fully embracing liberty and allowing everybody to choose for themselves and being sovereigns and that they are going to be accountable and responsible. In other words, they do something wrong, they will actually, you know, be willing to be accountable. They'll go to court, they'll take their punishment for the mistakes that they made. That is a society based on liberty. the society that's based on enslavement. You have no choice. I mean, the total enslavement is that state controls everything, and you do something wrong, you're done. You're gone. If you don't comply, and the worst thing you can do is not comply. They have no compulsion in killing and getting rid of you because of your ideology or what have you. There's reasons why different people were killed during different stages, whether World War II, it was the Jews, or whether it was the educated with Pol Pot, the Khmer Rouge, what have you. Those people were perceived as the threats, and that's why they were killed. And patriots will be perceived as threats to the new globalist agenda. That's one of the reasons why the Obama administration labeled military people as more patriotic and more of a threat than anybody else. But anyway, as we've wandered through this, we've gone through, again, republicanism, natural law, and we've covered property. That's why we're going to cover the Tory Acts. The Tory Acts covers what do you do now that you realize that there's these people out there, that there's just nothing we can do. Well, the Tory Acts is one way of addressing that. And that's one of the things we need to put on the table so that you can actually say, you know what? We need to be civil. And there's different ways we can kind of implement with technology today. We don't necessarily have to deport. But that the Tory Acts actually deported British loyalists and those who could not be trusted. Then we're going to get into the cod fishery bounties that Madison actually, I believe it was 1792, right around the time he did his paragraph on property, or not paragraph, his essay on property. We want to get into that as well, because Madison, I think, says it best in this congressional debate on the purpose of government and the purpose that the government, things that government should not be doing. The Federalist Papers, we're going to just kind of highlight what I believe are those important parts of the Federalist Papers that kind of give you insights, but they don't even come close to the ratification debates. But we'll get into those. Then we will cover the Madison's letter to John Jay Jackson. And then after that, we'll probably get into the nullification and or interposition, the 1798 resolutions. But actually, probably before that, I think we'll cover the veto of the Department of Transportation by Madison, Monroe, and Jackson. So that's the kind of content that we're going to be laying out for you, because we want to create an irrefutable argument that the federal government is defined. It can't do anything. The states have to delegate any power it wants to do. And it can't just necessarily start oppressing us because we have these things called the Bill of Rights and the 14th Amendment and so forth. So anyway, this whole thing started because I was trying to promote a listener drive. I would be honored, and I believe that getting more people to understand that there is an irrefutable argument out there that if you listen to this content, you start making it makes sense that the federal government has a very locked down compact, that the states have the ultimate say over everything within that compact. So with that, I want to start moving forward, because I did promise you that we're going to get into the G. Edward Griffin Need to Know News. By the way, I don't think I've mentioned in a little while that we do have Red State Coffee. There's different ways you can support us. We need you to get involved. Remember, if you want to be a part of the problem, then don't do anything. But if you want to be a part of the solution, there's different ways you can contribute, whether that's contributing and helping us or what have you. Now, let me do the recap, because as I already kind of recapped the scale of liberty, because there's two sides to this. It's full liberty and or full enslavement. We're at a point in technology where they can keep track of every action and almost every thought that you're thinking, almost there. And so when they get there, they will do everything they possibly can to take full control, because that's their objective. Big Brother 1984, their objective is to control every facet of mankind. So we've got these two ends. We've kind of covered the brilliance of Republicanism and American Republicanism, because America, we actually have sovereigns who have representation, not just the people. If it's just the people, then it's a lot closer to a democracy. But when you have sovereigns, then sovereigns actually become that check and balance against the people just wanting to be, you know, given and constantly being fed ice cream like kids. And then the states being, you know, and, or the county saying, you know what, we need to keep a limited government because we have these operational needs that we need, or these strategies of growth or what have you, and development. Republicanism keeps us really on a, in a balanced mode as we progress and as our nation evolves. The reason we have become so ideologically bent is because we've lost that. We've lost that balance in legislation in our governments, from the state, especially in the state government, the 17th Amendment as well. And we talked about that as well. We talked about natural law. So let me recap a little bit on natural law. Natural law does not include theocracies. People think, well, natural law, God's law, is one of those things that says, well, it's a theocracy. No. As a matter of fact, a theocracy is contrary to natural law, because a theocracy starts to dictate a very specific moral behavior. It starts to dictate. Natural law leaves the moral behavior and the controls of that to the church. People, if you want to be a member of this church, you have to comply to God's laws as the doctrine is espoused and so forth. We can see today that if we're going to have an awakening, and this is one of the things you don't necessarily hear from some pastors are honest enough to say this, if we're going to have a third awakening, the churches need to turn its back on government and they need to start taking a stand. And as a matter of fact, most pastors and ministers need to stop being professionals and basically living off of the labor of their parishioners and actually come to the table as those who are in service and the capacity at that point in time and providing their living for their family. In other words, they actually go and have a job. You know, John Adams' father, I said this all the time, John Adams' father was a cobbler as well as a way leader in his church. He was the pastor for his church. And he was a cobbler. We need to get back to that. Having professional, because this is how, when you have professionals or people that are being taken care of by the church, they have no compunction in dictating whatever's necessary to help grow the power of church. But when you don't have that, then you don't have the need to say, well, I need to preach more because I need to get more out of my parishioners. As a matter of fact, there are preachers that will tell you that there are certain types of sermons that if they preach those types of sermons, people will reach deeper into their pockets to give more money. And so if you're going to tell me that it's not a big business, it is a big business. Now, there are good pastors out there, but there are lots of them, if not all of them, recognize there are certain things that actually help make money. And one of the reasons why most Christian churches are embracing homosexual marriage today, it makes money. Those people are coming and saying, you know, hey, we want to contribute to the church and start giving the pastor some good money. And then all of a sudden, you know what? You're not supporting this. And so we're going to go elsewhere with the money. How else do you think because these pastors are dependent on that money and they want to get dependent on a nice lifestyle? Well, that he who pays the piper calls the tune. And if the piper is truly not beholding to the people and his income and his livelihood is not beholding to those contributions, they're probably going to be a little bit more accurate doctrine-wise, and they're not going to be perverted, less likely. Anyway, but the whole point is that natural law does not necessarily embrace, and it cannot necessarily allow a theocracy, because a theocracy is not in compliance to natural law. There is, and there's a group of pastors out there and or academics that are all preaching on the Declaration of Independence. And I want to get into that next. So we'll be right back regarding the Declaration of Independence and how it is being elevated wrongly. So we'll be right back.
Folks, Red State Talk Radio has brought back its monthly newsletter. I know everyone gets a lot of emails, but this is not a daily or weekly newsletter. It's a monthly newsletter. So you will not be overwhelmed with a plethora of emails from Red State Talk Radio. Come on, it's only once a month. I'll be contributing a constitutional perspective to one of the current issues to help everyone see an alternative perspective, or what I believe would be a framer's perspective regarding the issue to help us maintain a constitutional paradigm. I will also provide information regarding a significant historical context to the time of year so that we can remember our history, so we will not be doomed to repeat the inevitable failings from forgetting our past and origins. Just go to Red State Talk Radio and sign up for the newsletter. This way you can get a focused view of what is going on in the Republic as well as what is going on at Red State Talk Radio. Thank you.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
Okay, so there are those, and as a matter of fact, I ran into a really arrogant professor. And arrogant being that he just refused to read anything that I had because he was just, actually, I should, and I will get what he actually sent me because I've asked him, have you read this? Have you read this? Have you read this? And he kept on, you know, dancing around. Finally, he says, I don't have the time and I'm not going to waste my time in reading your content. And I go, okay, well, that's fine, but it's one thing to actually say that you don't necessarily support somebody's idea, but if you don't read it, then you have no standing. I mean, we're not even standing on an objective argument. You have to understand what that person is presenting so that you can refute what they've presented. And this person, this professor, Jerome Hueler, H-U-Y-L-E-R, Hueler, anyway, I believe that's how you pronounce it. But, you know, I'm the first to tell you I'm really bad with names. Anyway, he believes that the Declaration of Independence is our founding document, and it is still the document and law of the land. No. And I want you to understand, because there are people out there that saying we're endowed by these inalienable rights. Yes. We are endowed by inalienable rights, and those rights have been protected under the Constitution, so they're not necessarily endowed by our Creator anymore. We have nugatory laws, whether we like it or not. We evolved. The Declaration of Independence did not create a government. It did not become the credo of every state, and every state was ran by the Declaration of Independence. The Declaration of Independence was a shot across the bow to Britain to let them know that we as Englishmen had rights and inalienable rights. Had the king, had Parliament come back after they received the Declaration and said, you know what, we're wrong, we need to give you representation, We, instead of actually trying to subjugate us, and they actually took a stand on saying, you know what, we were wrong. We need to, you know, come to the table, have you, you know, participate in government and parliament and so forth. We would no longer be Americans. We would still be British. Had they come back and said, yeah, you're right. And look at Britain and government today. The Declaration of Independence was literally just drawing a line saying, if you're not going to recognize our inalienable rights that we had in that Bill of Rights from the Glorious Revolution, then we're going our own way. And as Thomas Jefferson said, every citizen, you know, governments can be overthrown, especially after a long train of abuse. But the problem is that you have to at least stand up and say this is wrong. And we have yet to have, and in our system, so we evolved from that Declaration of Independence to the Articles of Confederation, which were defunct and failed, to the Constitutional Republic that we have today. And I engage all sorts of people that keep on going back to, I don't recognize that Constitution because it's illegitimate, because the only document we have is the Declaration. I'm sorry. You are illusion. I mean, delusional, that's the better word. You are completely delusional in trying to believe and supporting the argument that the Declaration of Independence is the founding formation of our government. All 13 states and the delegates that were sent ratified and have formally accepted, and every state in this union has formally accepted that Constitution as it is. Now, I know that there are people that understand there's an annotated constitution. Show me in the constitution that the states have, that the states actually passed an amendment to allow the federal government to create an annotated constitution to allow them to dictate by whim however they want to govern us. You see, my friends, we have a constitutional republic that the states own and control. And the problem is the states have not asserted their authority over this. All of these shenanigans that have been done have all been violations of the Constitution. And the only way we're going to fix this is by auditing that Constitution, holding the general government accountable for violating our compact. We delegated to them to perform these tasks and only these tasks, to give them these responsibilities and only these responsibilities. We also created extra limitations to ensure that they wouldn't even try to even go down these paths, to guarantee that we would have a trial by jury. My friends, if you do not understand, if you do not grasp the fundamentals of the evolution of American history, you can easily be swayed by these Jeromes and others. I've ran into candidates that said, oh, it's the Declaration of Independence is our key foundation. Actually, I'm sorry. Even the framers knew that the Constitution that they were giving us violated the Declaration of Independence because it was a political compromise. They felt it was necessary to ensure slavery, but to make slavery a state issue. The federal government didn't galvanize slavery into the Constitution, or the states did not galvanize it. Actually, what the states did was they made some political compromises that in 1808, the slave trade would be shut down. And you'll actually find that in Article 1, Section 9. And I'm here to tell you that the apportionment for three-fifths of blacks was not a racist thing. It was a mathematical thing, because they understood that in an agrarian society where it would be beneficial for slavery, that they could only grow so much, that once the states became saturated, the northern states would eventually have greater representation, and their disdain for slavery, the abolition movement, would grow and grow and grow in the north to a point where they would start becoming oppressed. And that's They should never have violated the Constitution. They should have basically said, look, you know, that thing called slavery, we're getting rid of it. We're, you know, you guys are going to have to get rid of it because we've got enough states now where we can get 3/4 of the states to ratify. But the problem was that they made another stupid compromise under Monroe's watch. And this is where Monroe, it was a huge travesty. Monroe violated the Constitution by allowing the Missouri Compromise to come to be. I don't like going down these paths because they just take some time for me to explain for you. And the reason I do this is because racism is such a lightning rod issue. We're so divided over that one particular topic of slavery, racism, and so forth. The fact of the matter is, had we complied to the Constitution, the Civil War would have been even sooner. Because in the 1920s, we probably would have been faced with that Civil War because they would not have been able to force slavery upon Missouri and other states, Texas and so forth. You would have found that the states that were deciding to embrace slavery would have been quickly outnumbered and they would have been basically ratified out by actually declaring slavery as illegal, immoral, and so forth. And that amendment would have come forth. But unfortunately, there was political compromises that compromised that Declaration of Independence. And now we're heading down this path where the Declaration of Independence is being violated. But even more importantly, it's the Constitution that's being violated. It's not about the Declaration of Independence. We do not have a Declaration of Independence government. We have a constitutional Republican form of government. So anyway, I just want you to understand that there are these groups out there that are seem like they're really patriotic. We have these inalienable rights. And yeah, but that has nothing to do with our constitutional Republican form of government. We have a very limited and defined government. They can't be dictating these things. Now, the states can, and the states have the power of doing some things. And that's what we've just gone through. So I hope this all makes sense. And that's why I want to let you know that what we'll be covering later on, it'll probably be later on this week, because I still need to get into the need to know news. And as I look over my shoulder, I'm basically out of time. I can't believe this. And see, friends, this is why, you know, it takes a little bit of time to get through some of this content so that I can lay it out and go, boom, I think this is a closed case. The Declaration of Independence is nice. It is a historical document. It was what paved the way for our Articles of Confederation and ultimately our hybrid constitutional republic. But it is not our governing doctrine. It is literally just a declaration and something that we built upon. Anyway, so these people that are making so much out of the Declaration of Independence, and that's how they're going to fight the revolution, they're doing it outside the Constitution. What we need to do is we need to have the states not wage war. We need to have the states audit their Constitution or audit the Constitution against the roles, responsibility, and powers being exercised and step in and say no more. And that process is republic review. And that is the process that you will find that Thomas Jefferson and James Madison invoked. And that's one of the reasons why we will get into the 1798 resolutions. So we will dive into, we'll start right off tomorrow with Need to Know News, and we'll probably have Alex Newman on Wednesday. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution.